This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, with the pending change, not just of presidents, but of governing ideologies, outgoing President Barack Obama is furiously working to make sure his presence is felt after his departure with thousands of new regulations. But Congress has a tool to undo them. The author of the Congressional Review Act, former Indiana congressman and now president for the Club for Growth, David McIntosh, joins us to explain in just a moment. And today is National Religious Freedom Day. President Obama released a proclamation over the weekend saying, quote, "We must be unified in our commitment to protecting the freedoms of conscience and religious belief and the freedom to live our lives according to them," end quote. That sounds great. But the policies of the Obama administration belie his commitment to religious freedom, both here and abroad. Tom Farr, president of the Religious Freedom Institute, is here to discuss the president's words and actions and the hopes for the new administration. And that freedom of religion, how critical was it to the success of the man honored today, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.? Former Cincinnati mayor and Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell is here with that answer. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. And by the way, jot down the number, 866-372-7234. A little bit later, we'll go to the phone lines. But first, in 1996, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, as a part of his contract with America, shepherded the Congressional Review Act into law, giving Congress the power to kill unwelcomed federal regulations. Now, it's seldom used, but President-elect Trump is expected to use it. Now, the man who helped make the Review Act a reality is former Indiana congressman and now president of the Club for Growth, David McIntosh, and he joins us now. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's great to be with you.
Well, I guess you're pretty excited to see not just a isolated use being, heralded for the Review Act, but it sounds like it's going to get a lot of action in the coming weeks.
I think it can and should. I am very excited about it. You know, before the Review Act, Congress was powerless when these regulatory agencies issue a regulation that went further than Congress intended or in a different direction. This gives them some power to review it, but effectively it's only been used once in the transition from Bill Clinton to George W. Bush as president to eliminate the ergonomic rule that the Clinton administration had imposed on workers everywhere. Now we're seeing potentially 150 Obama administration regulations that are eligible to be reviewed and, if Congress so decides, rejected by Congress as being too costly, putting on too much of a burden on American workers and American industry, and taking away jobs, effectively. So I'm delighted that the Republican Congress, both House and Senate, have agreed to take it up. One of the things it does, which is so important...
Oops, I think we lost David there for just a moment. We'll get him back. We'll rescue him. It's an important tool because, as you've probably read, the president is, as I said earlier, furiously passing executive orders and pushing regulations through the pipeline that go beyond the reach of Congress, even though they may be in contradiction to the stated purposes of Congress. And, I mean, they're working overtime. In fact, I imagine that he is going to be signing some of these things as he walks out the door at 12 o'clock on Friday. And so this gives Congress, we get to him back on the line. I'm going to get David McIntosh to explain how this works. But they're, okay, we got David back. All right, David, welcome back. Glad to have you back.
Sorry about that. I'm at an airport taking my son to the plane.
All right. I thought that was moveon.org trying to keep you from giving the details of how this works. Hey, now explain to our listeners how the Review Act will actually work. How does it function?
So when when a member of Congress decides the regulation is too costly, and if it costs over $100 million, then that member of Congress can collect signatures and get enough signatures to essentially force a vote on the House floor or on the Senate floor up and down as to whether this regulation should be rejected. And if the House votes to reject it, then the process continues on to the Senate, where, again, you don't have to have a filibuster. It only takes 50 votes in order to pass a resolution of disapproval. Now, that goes then to the president, who has to sign it. That's why if Obama were still president, he would veto anything that the Republican Congress did. But now Trump, as the new president, has signaled he will sign these for regulations that are too costly and don't make sense.
So it has to reach that threshold of having a cost of $100 million?
Yes. We put that in there so that it wouldn't be every single regulation. But it's still amazing that you've got 150 that would qualify for that.
And do they have to be done individually, or can they be done, can you do a bulk of them at one time?
When we wrote the bill, we assumed they would be done individually, but there's nothing that says that the Senate and the House couldn't bring them up as a whole block of votes that would vote on them. And in the House, for example, you've got a procedure where the rule could just deem that each of them have been voted on. The Senate, they'd have to negotiate a particular process. But what it also does is limit the debate. And one of the things the Republicans could do is say, we don't need the full 10 hours on each of these. We know how bad they are. We'll debate them all at one time and then bring them up for vote.
Now, David McIntosh, also I think one of the provisions is that this can be kind of retroactive only back to a certain period of, I think it's six. How many legislative days is it that you can actually reach back?
It's 60 legislative days, which translates roughly to 6 months back. Someone has calculated the date about mid-May of last year. So if the Obama administration, some of its worst rules were put in place before that, that they can still be dealt with, but it's regular legislation, and you have the filibuster in the Senate. Or the president can order his agencies to redo those rules, but that tends to take 3 or 4 years to get at the quickest, sometimes 5 or 6, to really write a new rule that would repeal the old rule.
So what we see Barack Obama doing on his way out, you know, pushing these rules, I mean, literally hundreds of rules that he is pushing here in his final days. It's kind of like throwing everything against the wall and something he believes is going to stick that's going to leave a lasting impression from his administration, at least for several years before it's corrected.
He sure is hoping it. You see on everything from the way he treats people who escaped from communist Cuba, who are now on Obama's new order, no longer treated as religious refugees or refugees from a communist government, to regulations that affect power plants and would cost everybody much more for their electricity, to regulations on trucking. I mean, it's all across the board, Tony, where this president, you're right, is trying to put his last stamp on the administration, hoping that some of it will stick and the Republicans will have too much on their plate to weed out all of it.
Now, these rules, David, are different than his executive orders. Now, those are handled in a different way. The president himself can reverse and undo those executive orders. So this is just the regulations, the rules that have been pushed by the various agencies, correct?
That's right. Now, you can use it for what they call guidance documents. You know, sometimes the agencies will skip the public notice and comment and just give a guidance to the people they're regulating. And those don't go through a process either. There, it's easier for the agency to just reverse it and say, that's no longer our guidance. But Congress has the ability, if it's particularly egregious, to bring it up for a vote and say, no, we're rejecting this. One advantage of that is that once it's been rejected in the form that Obama proposed, it can't come back in that form. Congress has then spoken, and it's as the law is, the agency no longer has the power to issue that same regulation.
So our listeners are clear on that. The benefit of this process, the Review Act, is that one of these onerous policies or rules that's pushed by an agency that bypassed Congress, if Congress speaks on it by using the Review Act, that agency cannot try to push that rule again. They have to go to Congress, correct?
That's right. They'd have to go to Congress, get a new law passed that would give them the power to issue that rule. So it's got a very permanent effect of barring these agencies from trying to resurrect these bad regulations sometime in the future.
David, let me say congratulations on the forethought to put such a policy into law. I doubt we could get one today. So it's good that it was done 20 years ago so that it's in place to undo a lot of the damage that's been done by the rules of this administration.
Yeah, thank you. Sometime I'll share with you the backstory of how Speaker Gingrich and I got that into the debt ceiling bill. President Clinton didn't really even know it was there until the next day after he signed the bill. And there was a newspaper article saying, oh, my goodness, what have we done? But now we've got it, and it's a tool we can use.
I've been a part of some of those types of measures that have gone through unnoticed.
Yep.
So it's, you know what? At the end, it's good. David, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tony. Blessing.
All right. Former Indiana Congressman David McIntosh, he is now president of the Club for Growth, talking about the Congressional Review Act. You're going to hear more about that in the coming days as Congress sets out here in just, they're already getting started. I was talking with members over the weekend, making a list of those policies that they will, rules, I should say, that they will go after to reverse from Obama agencies. Now, he was talking about guidance letters as well. That's kind of like the guidance letter from the Department of Education on the gender-confused bathrooms, of just, you know, creating the confusion over gender and forcing schools to allow boys to use girls' rooms and vice versa, locker rooms, showers. That can be corrected. And so, you know, we're making a list, working with the administration to make sure these things get addressed. A lot, quite frankly, a lot to address. And as I said, this administration is not going to give up. They're not going to quit. And that's, I don't know that I would say respect, but the tenacity of liberals is admirable. They fight what they believe in. They fight for it. I just hope that we would do the same, that we will stand, as I talk about from the Apostle Paul, for the things we believe in, for the truth, transcendent truth, not liberal ideologies that have proven to fail, but transcendent truth that has lasted through the ages. It's time for us to be tenacious. Speaking of that, today is also the Religious Freedom Day. When we come back, we're going to talk about the president's proclamation recognizing today is National Religious Freedom Day. Sounds good. In fact, most of it I could have written. A couple bad spots in there, but I could have, for the most part, written his proclamation. But his actions do not line up with his words. We're going to talk about this proclamation, the National Religious Freedom Day, and what has to happen going forward in the next administration as it pertains to religious freedom here and abroad. Tom Farr joins us next. Don't go away. We're back with a lot more Washington Watch on the other side of this break.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetalpain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Police officers deserve our respect, honor, and our prayers. Every day they put their lives on the line to protect and to serve in an increasingly hostile climate. Yet currently hanging in the U.S. Capitol is a piece of art depicting police officers as pigs. This offensive painting was chosen by Democrat Congressman William Clay from Missouri as the winner of an art contest from his home district. Congressman Clay described this insulting depiction of police as, quote, "the most creative expression that I've witnessed over the last 16 years, unquote. Call Congressman Clay and urge him to remove this reprehensible painting. It's not a question of censorship. It's a matter of respect for the police who risked their lives for our safety. Call the Capitol at 202-224-3121 and ask to speak with Congressman Clay. 202-224-3121. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 1,790 families have had their homes rebuilt because of you, the listener at American Family Radio, when you've partnered with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims to no fault of their own who lose everything to see volunteers show up and help them rebuild. 2 years ago, we started a rapid response division that goes within 72 hours and since then have gone to 15 communities across America. Would you consider becoming a part of 8 Days of Hope as we continue to look for ways to grow the ministry in 2017. Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well. Please continue to pray for the ministry as we look forward to what God has in store for us. Thank you so much for your prayers, your financial support, and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
AFR urges you to support the ministry of 8 Days of Hope at 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. For some, a holiday, having the day off, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We're going to talk about that in the next segment with our good friend Ken Blackwell, about the role that religious freedom played in his ability to advocate for civil rights. But now I want to talk about another holiday or another day of recognition, the Religious Freedom Day, which happens to be today. President Obama yesterday issued a proclamation once again, recognizing January the 16th as Religious Freedom Day. This is the 231st anniversary of the passage of the Virginia Statute for Establishing Religious Freedom in 1786. Really became the foundation. It was Thomas Jefferson wrote it. It became the foundation for our First Amendment freedom. With us now is Tom Farr, president of the Religious Freedom Institute, director of the Religious Freedom Research Project at Georgetown University, and the first director of the Office of International Religious Freedom at the U.S. State Department. Tom, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Great to be with you.
I assume that you have perused the president's proclamation on Religious Freedom Day.
I have. It's a pretty good document. I think it reads very well.
In fact, I just said that a few moments ago. I said, for the most part, I could have written it myself. A couple of things, I would have left out the barbs about the cowboy hats, but other than that, it was well written. But Tom, I have to ask you this: has his actions matched those words?
Unfortunately, no, Tony. I think this is another example of the sometimes magnificent rhetoric that's come from this president. Although I can assure you he didn't write this, but one of his people wrote it. But the rhetoric does not match the action or the reverse. And let me just give one example of this, which I'm sure you've talked about with your listeners, but it bears repeating. Back in July, something called the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights issued a formal report, and the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights has been with us since, I believe, the late 50s. It's an independent but government, U.S. government, agency of the U.S. government funded by the Congress. The chairman is appointed by the president, and the chairman, a gentleman named Martin Castro, was appointed by President Obama. And in this formal report, he issued a judgment about religious freedom. Again, this is the commission designed to protect the civil rights of all Americans, to stand up for all of us. And in it, Mr. Castro, the chairman, said religious freedom is a front for bigotry. It is a pretext for people who hate. It is a pretext for racism, for subordinating women, for Christian supremacy. Now, it's one thing when a private citizen who is, as far as I'm concerned, off his marbles, says something like this. But when a U.S. government, federal government agency issues this kind of report, it's outrageous. So I got a group of, a very diverse group of religious leaders to sign a letter to the president. It included Muslims, Jewish signatories, a Hindu signatory, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, and a whole group of, and of course, Christian leaders as well. And in it, it said, Mr. President, this is outrageous. We all agree. We have very different religious beliefs, but we all believe in religious freedom. Please repudiate your appointee. And of course, Mr. Obama simply refused to do it. He sent back a letter that sort of blew us off and said, said absolutely nothing. He refused to repudiate his own appointee. So this is a president whose rhetoric has outstripped his actions. And, of course, there are many other examples that are probably worse than this one. But this one I thought was particularly jarring. So when you see this magnificent document, you just wonder what is the connection between that and reality? I fear there's very little.
Yeah, you just watch my hands as I move these things around. Don't pay any attention to what I'm doing over here. You're absolutely right. We had the author of one of the minority reports on the program about the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, because that was alarming. You're absolutely right. That was frightening that you would have a government entity make such statements about religious, orthodox religious practice in this country. There is a foreign policy side of this issue as well. Today's National Religious Freedom Day, but we cannot separate our focus on international religious freedom from our domestic focus. We have seen a decline in America's participation in defending that first freedom for all humans, which has long been a stated policy goal of our country under this administration. And, of course, the ambassador at large for religious freedom is a key component of that. And that's a vacancy that we currently will have that the president, incoming president, will soon fill.
That's right. Well, we hope he will soon fill it. We've had this policy, which is a legal policy, which Mr. Obama addressed again in his statement, saying that it was so important. But unfortunately, as you say, the proof has not been in the pudding during the last 8 years. During the last 8 years, religious persecution has spread. Violent religious extremism has spread. It isn't that our country is responsible for this, but we have done virtually nothing to stem the tide of this terrible humanitarian catastrophe, the way religious minorities, especially Christians, are treated in the Middle East and elsewhere, but it also is a catastrophe with national security implications.
Yes.
If the Christians flee the Middle East, with them goes any possibility of pluralism. And if the Middle East becomes nothing more than a Muslim majority, whether it's Shiite or Sunni, and this would be true, really, Tony, of other religions as well, things don't work well. And so pluralism means stability. That's a U.S. National security interest. And the same is true of course, of religious freedom as a way to undermine religious violence and terrorism. It could be an anti-ISIS diplomatic tool, but it's not. It hasn't been under this president. And indeed, it took him almost 2 years to get his first ambassador in place. Now think about that. If President Trump leaves this, and I don't think he will, but I urge him not to leave this post vacant for 2 years, then what will happen is that morale will plummet in the office of the good people who work on this issue. Foreign governments and victims of persecution will notice that it's happening. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that the Trump administration move quickly in its first wave of ambassadorial nominations.
Critical, critical. I hate to break you off. We've got to leave it there. We're up against a break. Folks, don't go away. Ken Blackwell is here next.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
One of the things that we all need to be doing, well, right now, actually, is to be praying that the UN resolution on Israel does not see the light of day this week. It's due up on the 17th, and hopefully that won't happen. Of course, the House passed Resolution 11 by a vote of 342 to 80, basically condemning the UN resolution. So we need to be praying about that. Hope that happens. That is one thing. When we look at the economic data, it's going to be a interesting week economically. There are some that are predicting a severe downturn in the markets as a result of the VIX. The VIX is the index of volatility that is actually traded by speculators. And according to that, it looks like we're in for, well, a severe downturn after the inauguration. Now, it's not generally right, and it could be very short-lived if it is right. But nonetheless, just thought I'd throw that out there. We are getting Empire manufacturing numbers. That is coming out, and it's expected to be down. This is a January number. The most important number this week that we're going to be looking at, as far as I'm concerned, is industrial production for December. It'll be interesting to see how we end the year in industrial production. It's expected to be up 0.6%. That would be a significant increase over the -0.4% that we had in November. So that is probably the most important number. We do get some housing numbers with housing starts and building permit number also. These are December numbers, so it's going to give us some indication of how they ended up the year on the construction home building side of things.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, @tperkins. Speaking of religious freedom, each day I tweet out a devotional thought. So if you'd like to get that, just follow me, @tperkins. Well, today we honor the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And as we do, I think it's absolutely essential, although some on the left today want to kind of diminish this aspect of Dr. Martin Luther King. Let me say it was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. He was a preacher. They want to diminish the role that religious freedom played, which in fact was essential to MLK's ability to work for civil rights. Here to talk about it is our own Ken Blackwell, Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance at the Family Research Council, former Ohio Secretary of State, former Cincinnati Mayor, and now President-elect Trump's transition team and a board member of almost every conservative organization in the country. Ken Blackwell, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you, and happy Martin Luther King Day.
You know, is this not one aspect of his life, which was actually central to who he was, that the left tries to diminish, and that is the role that religious freedom played, his ability to use the pulpit to stir the heart of a nation?
Absolutely. And Dr. King's preaching was truly a journey into the heart of Jesus. He had a unique ability to make complex doctoral issues crystal clear. And he did it with an appreciation for the fact that moral relativism was on the march even in his early time. And he knew that it was important that we establish that Christ had revealed, you know, that God's moral standards and moral words, eternal words. And so he was a big believer in moral absolutes, because he thought it was only when we appreciated moral absolutes that we, in fact, could appreciate one another. And if you can, you know, if you become a captive or an advocate for moral relativism, it is easy to discriminate against others. And so I think you're absolutely right. It's funny how those on the left will forget that he was a preacher of the gospel, and that was really the heart and soul of of who he was.
Yeah, and if you read his speeches, of course, his speeches were like sermons as well. I mean, I'm hard pressed to find one of his speeches that was not where biblical truth and analogies were not woven throughout the speech. But I have to say, I mean, he is was a remarkable communicator in the way he wrote. I mean, I've read his speeches just because they're so well done. He was such a good communicator, and I have to believe that he operated with not just inspiration, but he was an anointed communicator, powerful. And, you know, for all of the, you know, every leader has controversy surrounding them, but you have to say he left his mark on the nation in a positive sense of advancing the cause of civil rights in this country and bringing us closer together regardless of our ethnic backgrounds.
Oh, absolutely. As I've told you before, one of his mentors was a fellow from Cincinnati, the Reverend L.V. Booth, and he would come to Cincinnati and meet with leaders at L.V. Booth's home. And I remember being very young, sitting in Reverend Booth's living room.
Now, that wasn't the same time you worked at the funeral home there in Cincinnati, was it?
It was a little bit after then.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I remember that one of the passages from the Bible that he used to quote frequently, and I think of it often, was 1 Corinthians chapter 14:8. And for if the trumpet gives an uncertain sound, who should prepare himself for the battle? And he understood that the trumpet that he blew had to be consistent with the words of God to prepare us stand in the gap between America's promise and America's practice. He understood that there was a gap throughout history, but it was for those of us who were believers to stand in that gap and move and act for moral coherence, to get our behavior in line with those things we profess to believe, to get our behavior in line with God's words, and that was very meaningful to me. I mean, I think of it often. And he was also a buddy of Bishop S.M. Lockridge, and they would go back and forth, and they had this thing where they talked about, you know, Christ is enduringly strong and eternally steadfast and imperially powerful, and that there was no barrier that could hinder him from pouring out his blessings. And again, that's the message that we should understand today, because it was a message that brought the people of goodwill together to make America as great as it could possibly be.
Yeah, and it was the unity that came among believers who surrendered to the truth of God's word that transcended the cultural barriers that existed in this nation. Ken Blackwell, always great to talk with you. We're going to get you back on sometime. We'll talk more about this when we get a chance, to the impact that the civil rights movement had on your very successful career as a statesman and a leader in our country. Ken, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tony. God bless.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation on religious freedom and the importance that it should take in the next administration. But it's a conversation I want to have with you. Don't go away.
Isn't it refreshing to have a president that isn't hostile to Christianity? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. There's no question about it. The Christian religion was dominant in early America, and there's a reason our country was called a Christian nation. We're going to see this rich history when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June, and then the other one in September. In addition, we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but you can do both of those tours with us if you would like to. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian as he tells us about our great Christian heritage and history. For more information on either of these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
News travels fast and it's constantly changing. Keep up on onenewsnow.com. It's a news site featuring the latest breaking stories from across the U.S. and around the world. OneNewsNow.com has well-researched articles from a conservative evangelical perspective with hot topics of concern to Christians right now. Get the full story when you visit OneNewsNow.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
We've always had an interest. God has given us a gift of being able to help a lot of people with their finances and budgets and stuff.
AFA supporters Bernie and Alice Larson met Dan Celia at a Faith, Family, and Finance town hall meeting.
And he answered some questions, and we were thinking about the charitable gift annuities, and we'd never heard of that before, but we thought, well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how. And we felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
Bernie and Alice learned a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation would provide them with a monthly income for life, as well as supporting the American Family Association into the future. You can learn more about charitable gift annuities and other financial products at afafoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
And you just can't outgive God.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Glad to have you with us. Thanks for joining us on this Monday afternoon. Big week. We're going to see a new president, the end of the 8 years of Barack Obama. And, I mean, there could not be a sharper contrast. I mean, there could not be. I mean, there was not even that much of a there was a contrast between George W. Bush and Barack Obama. But, I mean, this is going to be a sharp, almost whiplash contrast from day one. Now, one of the issues, Religious Freedom Day, National Religious Freedom Day, we're observing it. And as we talked about, the president's proclamation, good proclamation, but does not match his actions in the last 8 years. I mean, you can look at his health care law mandate that religious hospitals, charities, schools abandon the tenets of their faith and provide their employees insurance coverage of abortion-inducing drugs. The Obama Internal Revenue Service scandal using the power of tax collectors to subvert the First Amendment, asking people what they pray and part of the process. You know, the list goes on and on. So I talked about this last week. I think it was last week. Ameris poll, 89% of Americans, almost 90%, that's unprecedented, said that religious freedom, almost unprecedented. I mean, that's huge today in a nation that's so sharply divided, almost 50-50, that 90% of the people would say religious freedom is a priority for the incoming administration, 57% saying it should be a top priority. So I want to get your thoughts on this. How much of an emphasis should the Trump administration put on religious freedom? Now, bear in mind, there's a lot of stuff that has to be done. But unless there is, and I know this now from being in Washington for 14 years, that unless the public demands certain changes and a focus, it's not going to happen. So I'm not saying that any one thing on religious freedom should be done to the exclusion of other issues, national security, tax policy, so on and so forth. but I believe it's got to be right at the top, because this freedom is so essential, and it's been so damaged by this administration that if these changes are not made, we will settle into kind of a new normal of what we think religious freedom is. And we're so far removed from what the founders, as we celebrate today, 231 years ago, the Virginia Statute on Religious Freedom, we have moved so far away from that. So how much of an emphasis should the incoming Trump administration place on religious freedom? 866-372-7234. What in particular, if you have something, what in particular would you like to see them do to underscore their support for religious freedom? You don't have to have a particular example, but if you do, I'd love to hear it. 866-372-7234 on this Monday afternoon. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, let me remind you folks, in a new year, and this program, you know, we don't get government money. We're not NPR. We are here because of folks like you across the country that are supporters of the Family Research Council and of Washington Watch. And so I encourage you to partner with us to continue, because there's two reasons this program needs to continue. One, to support the good stuff that this administration is going to do, to help move it forward through Congress, and then to raise the alarm, to raise the flag, sound the alarm when there are issues that run counter to those stated conservative principles. So our job doesn't end. In many ways, it's just beginning. A lot of work to do, especially in the next 6 months. So we'd love to have you as a partner with us. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, let's go to Louisiana, where Daniel is on the line. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
How you doing, Tony?
I'm doing fine. How are you today? We lost him. All right, well, we'll see if we can find him. All right, let's go to Virginia, where Laura is on the line. Laura, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I guess I have a question and a comment. I'm curious your take on the whole separation of church and state, if you think President-elect Trump can clarify that and really put a definition to that so that everyone can understand it's not part of the Constitution.
All right. You got a comment as well?
Really, I think that kind of will answer the question, because
okay,
I think if we clarify that piece, then we can take the next step towards really releasing people to be free practice religion instead of being free from religion, which is kind of what it feels like has happened to our country.
Well, you're absolutely right, Laura. It's kind of been turned on its head. There are two aspects of the First Amendment. There is the free exercise clause, which says that you cannot be prohibited from exercising your religious freedom. Now, then there is the establishment clause, which prohibits the government from establishing a religion. And the whole idea, about separation of church and state is not a phrase or a term that you will find in the Constitution. It goes back to a letter from some Baptist in Connecticut that wrote a letter to Thomas Jefferson, fearful that they might be forced as Baptists, because they were actually a minority group at that time. They were not the largest Protestant denomination as they are today. And they were afraid that they would have to be paying taxes to support a state church or a national church. And a national church, not a state church, national church. And Thomas Jefferson said, no, we're not going to. There is a wall of separation between the state and the church, where we cannot get into your matters and we cannot force you. There's a wall of separation between us. It was not the idea that the church, through its people, could not influence the direction of a government. And what's happened is that the Establishment Clause is used weakly by liberal, atheist, anti-Christian groups. If someone is exercising the free exercise clause, they're exercising their religious freedom, but it happens to be on a government property, platform, then they say, well, that's an Establishment Clause violation, because they did it because they were school teacher, a congressman, city councilman, so on and so forth. So it's as if you have in the eyes of liberals, you have the free exercise, but only in your private capacity. And so if you want to fully exercise it, don't enter into the marketplace under Barack Obama. Don't become a public servant or so on and so forth. So there is this conflict that has long been there, but under the Barack Obama years of hostility toward Orthodox Christianity, it is only heightened. Can Donald Trump bring clarity to it? I think we are going to see this continue to be wrestled out in the courts. I think probably the greatest clarity that can be brought to this is by his nominations to the Supreme Court, who, for those that are nominating those who are strict constructionists, who will interpret the Constitution as it was written, that First Amendment as it was intended and as it was written. And when these cases come before the Supreme Court, that they tell the liberals to go pound sand. And that's how we'll see this clarified. It is going to have to wrestle its way through the courts, and that's why it's so important who Donald Trump appoints to the courts. So, Laura, thank you for the question. Great question, because it really is at the heart of this conflict and ongoing debate. All right, let's go to Tennessee, where Jacqueline is on the line. Jacqueline, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. I appreciate it. First of all, I'd like to say thanks for the 14 years you've been on Watch. We appreciate it, even though we didn't always pay close attention to the news and information you brought to us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir. And my comment is regarding religious freedom. I would like to see this administration match the push for Muslim and Islamic freedom in the U.S. Excuse me. Or even better than that, match the push for the LGBT, their freedoms. Match it for everybody else. There's so much attention given for those two entities as if they are the majority in the United States of America and as if they built the Constitution for the United States of America. And I know they're trying to dismantle it. I understand that. But I just want this administration to match the push for everybody else the way that this outgoing administration has pushed for them.
Let me ask you a question on that. I made reference to this earlier, but you are absolutely right in what Barack Obama has devoted himself to this view of promoting Islam in this country, and certainly more than any other president, elected official, promoted the whole agenda of the sexual agenda of the LGBTQI XYZ agenda. I mean, he's promoted that. Are, in your view, are conservatives as committed to their stated values as we see the left committed to theirs?
I believe they're as committed, but not as vocal. There's a difference to be going and praying on Sunday or whatever day somebody else goes to wherever they go, or doing it at home and being vocal and out front and verbal, blatant. Our president and his administration have been blatant, boldly in our face, as if America doesn't know how to vote for marriage. America doesn't know how to vote for anything pertaining to morality. They've been blatant with it. Well, if we would be as vocal as we are committed to our beliefs and our standard of living, it will be a startling change in America immediately.
Well, and I think it this is really what Jesus talks about not being ashamed of him and his word. And that while we believe it in our hearts, it's not enough. We have to stand up and speak it with our mouths. And I think you're absolutely correct. But let me underscore, and you know this, but I want our listeners to grasp this, and I hope come to this understanding that our elected leaders, and there's some good ones, very good ones, good committed men and women, Christians, but they are not going to be any stronger than the people who support them. They're not going to be any stronger than the pastors and what they preach from the pulpits of America. I mean, why would we expect our politicians to be bolder on the issue of life? By the way, next week, Sanctity of Human Life Week. Why would we expect the politicians to be stronger on life, sanctity of human marriage, than our pastors? Pastors, if we want our leaders to be strong and unequivocal in their stand for transcendent truth, then we have to preach that transcendent truth. And as Christians, those in the pews, we have to live it out ourselves, first in our own lives, but then also expect it to be the standard. Now, that means that we need to speak just as everyone else has the right to speak, to shape the policies that govern our country. Just because you're a Christian and you believe the Bible, contrary to what the left would want you to believe, that somehow you're disqualified from engaging in the debate over public policy because you take your understanding of the world from the Bible, that is where the founders actually got their view. Even though not all of them were what we would call evangelical Christians, the vast majority shared a biblical worldview. They believed that God created the world and he set the rules, and we were to seek to live by them. So it's extremely important that we all put our shoulder to the work. And I do believe we have a tremendous opportunity, but it's not going to happen on its own. Jacqueline, thank you so much for the call. Insightful comments, greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening and being a part of Washington Watch. Folks, opportunity is before us. But what we want to see happen in America will not happen unless we get the work done. And so I do hope that you will continue to listen to Washington Watch. I hope if you have not signed up for our daily updates that you are signed up and getting that information so that you can have the latest on what is happening in our nation's capital and equipped with the information to know what to do and the information of your elected officials, who to contact. I mean, we make it extremely easy for you. And of course, that's information you can share with your friends, Sunday school class, your church, neighborhood, family, whatever. Get it out there. Very, very important that you stay involved in this process and that your voice be heard. Well, folks, we're out of time. Not going to be able to take any more calls. Sorry, we got the phone lines are lit up. Obviously, an important topic that many of us care passionately about. We're going to continue this week discussing this. Believe me, religious liberty is not a topic that's going away off this program. It is something we're going to continue to talk about, advocate for, and make sure, as Jacqueline said, that this administration pursues it with the same zeal that the outgoing administration did in trying to shove it out of the public square. Thanks so much for listening, folks. Have a great evening, and I leave you once again with the encouraging, challenging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.